Good morning and welcome to History Matters, the programme that looks into history in more detail and that precedes the programmes produced together with the Museum of the Second World War. Today we'll be looking at the Battle of Narvik, and we're very lucky to have the main coordinator of the World Battlefield Museums Forum, Karel Shako. Good morning.
Good morning, Adam. Good morning, listeners.
Thank you so much for coming. I'm very, very pleased that you were able to come along today. There are quite a large number of battlefield museums that are in the forum. Could you mention some of them, please?
Yes, in 2018, when the first edition of the forum actually happened at the Museum of the Second World War in Gdansk, we managed to gather a good body of battlefield museums. And, you know, we are really impressed with this because we managed to get museums from the USA, from the Gettysburg Battlefield, from Pearl Harbor USSS Arizona Memorial. That was a big thing. There was also a representative of the museum from China. From
where in China? Do you remember?
That's the museum of. It's a very long name. It's the
Chinese, presumably.
Yes, in Chinese, but in English, it translates into the Museum of the Chinese People's Resistance Against Japanese Aggression.
Okay, which was a big thing.
That's a big museum. It's a huge museum in China, and from Europe also Verdun, Waterloo. From Czech Republic and from Slovakia, the Hussite Museum in Tabor, from the Gallipoli Battlefield in Turkey. Obviously, there's no proper museum there. It's just the battlefield, but that's run by the Turkish Historical Society. Also from Ukraine, from the Berestechko, commemorating the Ukrainian battles with the Poles in the 17th century. So, you know, there was a good number of, you know, of very well-established battlefield museums.
And is it a closed list?
Of course not. We are working towards, you know, next editions of the forum, the one that didn't happen because of the pandemic. We've come in contact with about, 30 institutions from...
New ones.
I mean, including those that came to the previous forum. Okay. We had managed to establish a base of additional 20 plus museums from around the world.
Can you give us a bit of a teaser as to which those museums, some of them, that might be appearing at the next forum?
We're not very sure about, you know, what the situation is going to be next year with the pandemic. But, for instance, we've come in contact with the museums from Australia, from New Zealand, Australian War Memorial. We've come in contact with the museum in Peru, which actually commemorates the Peruvian battles with
conquistadors.
Slightly later, that's from the 19th century. It commemorates the battles of the Peruvians with the Spaniards. Actually, and many others. Obviously, from France as well, the museums that we found were commemorating different battles at different stages of history.
So hopefully we'll have a lot more guests at the forum and hopefully a lot more programs on the subject.
Well, let's hope for it because, the situation is very dynamic, but the decision is that the next year's forum, 2022, is definitely going to happen. So we'll see how, what's going to happen.
And can people participate online in the forums? How does that work? Or is that more of a face-to-face forum?
I think when the pandemic struck, we really had this very serious discussion about whether the forum should happen online. But we decided against this because this is... a close meeting of individuals, of professionals, of museum curators, of people managing battlefields that exchange these ideas face-to-face,
multiple links.
And especially because this forum is international, it would be really difficult to participate in the forum for people, for instance, from the USA with the time shift or from Australia and New Zealand.
That's
so
true.
We've actually decided to... against the online formula because we just didn't want to, bring the forum onto the online world, although this is the mode that a lot of subjects now do. We wanted to keep the esteem of the forum as a you know, truly international scientific battlefield conference.
Well, that's great news. I think it's the quality of meetings is, when they're face to face, is always much higher.
So
that is good. So you work with the Battle of Narvik Museum.
Yes, we work with the Battle of Narvik Museum, and I can say the collaboration is nice and fruitful. Norway is not so far. Narvik is a bit farther north, but you know, we've had a very good contact with the Narvik Museum, and we do. Or we will do, or we are currently doing, you know, different projects together.
That's wonderful. That is good news. Tell me, in the Museum of the Second World War, because that's your other hat that you wear, you work for the museum in Gdańsk, which is a world-famous building. If anybody visits Gdańsk, they certainly should go and see it. How is the subject of Narvik covered?
With World Battlefields Museum Forum, when we were thinking about what battles to include, Narvik kind of, you know, appeared mm-hmm. naturally. And what we've done is we've already produced an infographic about a Narvik battle, mm-hmm. which we are going to expand because we've had a good chat with our Norwegians.
Sort of poster exhibition.
Sorry?
Like a poster exhibition.
No, it's just an infographic. Okay. And it's going to be published in a book of infographics, which is coming next year.
Okay.
Famous battles of World War II as part of World Battlefields Museums Forum. So we've produced that infographic. We've also talked recently with our Narvik friends, and they said, you know, the infographic needs to be slightly expanded. And we've agreed, yes, we are going to expand this infographic. And obviously, we've produced this audio radio show together with Radio Gdańsk about Narvik. Battle, which is very, very important for the Poles especially, but also, I believe, for the British and for the French.
Well, certainly.
And for the Norwegians, obviously, because that actually set, that battle set the mode to resist the Germans.
Well, talking about that, I mean, Narvik occurred 6 months after the last Polish unit surrendered to Poland's aggressors, so namely Germany and the Soviet Union. So it's not a very long time. I'm rather interested to know, could you tell our listeners, where were the Polish units at this time? There had been this big war invasion from two sides into Poland. So where were the Polish units in, let's say, March and April 1940?
Those units, obviously, you know, some of those units came from the soldiers that evacuated after the Polish campaign.
So where did they go?
They went, you know, basically they went to France, and from there they were in a camp, and then they, you know, they formed the unit of the Polish troops.
Mm-hmm. So, and the navy.
And the navy was obviously, you know, the navy is interesting because you know, during the German invasion, or even before the German invasion, there was a plan to evacuate part of the Polish Navy to Great Britain. And the plan worked because those destroyers like Grom or Błyskawica were evacuated to Great Britain. And obviously not to mention the great story of Polish submarine Ozho.
Yeah, they got out from Estonia, I believe that was.
Yeah.
So that is, so they were dispersed around Europe. So for our listeners, that is, they didn't come out of Poland to help fight Norway fight its aggressors. They were dispersed at that time. So it was, getting them together was a feat in itself. Tell me, this is again 6 months after Poland had fallen to its occupiers. Did the news of the battle reach Poland?
I don't know.
I don't know. Well, obviously they were.
It did
the
after the battle ended. I mean, after the Narvik battle ended,
yes.
Did it reach Poland?
Yes.
Oh yeah, it did. Of course.
Yeah.
So do you want that?
Yeah, please. So did news of the battle reach occupied Poland?
Oh yeah, the news of the battle reached occupied Poland, and this was really something meaningful for the occupied Poland, because that just showed that, you know, 6 months after we suffered the defeat, obviously we were brave in September 1939. We fought with all our might, but we lost to the prevailing German aggressor.
Being attacked on two sides.
Exactly, and the attack from the Soviet. East as well, from the Soviets. So when the news reached Poland, I think it did help to keep that fighting spirit. It just showed that, you know, in a relatively short time, we were able to master a fighting force that would actually confront the Germans in a difficult, icy, you know, foreboding Norwegian terrain. And I think that for morale of the Polish, you know, general public in occupied territories, it was extremely, extremely important to realize that.
That's very interesting. Thank you. Now, Norway, before Germany attacked, was neutral. It was stuck between two big powers. You had the UK, basically, and with its allies on the one side. You had Germany with its allies on the other side. And Norway was sort of stuck in the middle. Personal question, what's your view on neutrality?
I might say that sometimes it just is good to be neutral, but this is not our Polish story, okay? We don't know the notion of neutrality. We always stand up to fight the aggressors, and possibly this is something that in Poland is not really well accepted. Neutrality is more like, you know, I don't want to be too straight about it, but probably, you know,
fire away.
Now, neutrality is maybe more in Poland, you know, considered as collaboration rather than neutrality or staying neutral out of the conflict or out of the war. So probably the notion of neutrality is not going to be popular in Poland at any given time.
Very interesting. Thank you. So good morning, listeners. We're very lucky to have Nick Hewitt from the Royal Navy Museum in Portsmouth in the UK. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, nice to see you.
Yes, it's great. Thank you for coming onto the show. Could you tell us a little bit about Narvik?
The historical context of Narvik is really interesting. So what you have is a situation at the start of the Second World War, which is known in Britain. It's called, rather misleadingly, the Phony War. Clearly it's not phony for Poland, and nor is it phony for the Royal Navy. There's a lot going on at sea. What you have is Norway stuck in between two great powers, basically. Norway is the winter source of iron ore for the German war effort. So Swedish iron ore is shipped across when much of the Baltic is frozen. It's shipped across by railway across Norway and then picked up at Narvik and then shipped down the Norwegian coast to Germany.
Allied command, the Royal Navy command, had a large number of battleships. I believe there were Polish ships involved in the fight.
There were Polish submarines involved in the Norwegian campaign. And in fact, one of the first shots of the Norwegian campaign is fired by a Polish submarine, which is really very interesting kind of sub-story. The Germans are running their transport ships up to carry out this kind of secret invasion of Norway, if you like. One of them is sunk by a Polish submarine. When the Norwegians come out to investigate and they find survivors in the water, a lot of the survivors that they find in the water are, in fact, you know, uniformed German soldiers. So this is the first real alarm bell for the Norwegians that all is not as it seems, and these are not simply merchant ships coming up and down the coast.
Could you tell us a little bit about your museum, please?
Yes, these days now there is so much to see here that probably come over, spend a weekend here, spend the night in the fabulous city where there's some wonderful places to eat and drink, and do 2 days looking at all our stuff, because we have more than enough to fill 2 days now.
Well, that sounds fascinating. That's certainly an invitation to all our listeners. Well, thank you very much, Nick Hewitt, from the National Royal Navy Museum in Portsmouth. Our next guest is Agnieszka Landowska from the famous Naval Museum in Gdynia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming, and thank you for joining History Matters. I wanted to talk about
Narvik today. Could you tell me, is the battle well known in Poland?
If someone knows anything about the Battle of Narvik, probably the first connotation would be with the very famous the Polish Independent Highland Brigade, because they fought there very bravely, they are well remembered there. I don't think that many people would know about the work that our Navy put in this region. And the truth is that what the Polish Navy did in the Battle of Narvik is really huge. We had over there all our best destroyers, which is ORP Grom, Burza, Błyskawica. Our submarines were working there, Orzeł and Wilk. Also, we had our ocean liners like Chrobry, Batory, Sobieski, who for the purposes of war were changed into troop carriers. So our presence there was quite significant. What's even more is the destroyer ORP Grom is still there. So we lost quite a lot of our soldiers who are still there. Our main job is to collect all the artifacts, the memories, keep it and take a good care. In connection with Narvik, with the Battle of Narvik, we've got quite a few photographs taken from our ships, on our ships, off our ships, during the Battle of Narvik, being the Naval Museum, of course. We've got a few diaries, we've got some memories, and we've got the artifacts, some very personal belongings as well. For us, and our most precious, our most important exhibit in connection with the Narvik as well is, but of course, ORP Błyskawica. That ship is our absolute war hero and is unique in the world scale. It's the only destroyer of that time in the whole world. So we do have visitors literally from around the world. We've got visitors from America, from China, because you cannot see a ship like this anywhere else, especially in such a brilliant condition. You will see the armor, all the weaponry on it, as it originally had. Of course, it changed a little bit. So, of course, the Błyskawica that came to Gdynia in 1938 had a little bit different weaponry. We're working as a museum now on our new publication. You will be able to buy it next year, an album on Błyskawica. In the album, you will see a lot of beautiful pictures, lots of archive pictures, maybe not seen before even. There will be mentioned the Norwegian campaign, the Narvik battles.
Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the program.
You're always welcome.
Could you tell me, what are the lessons that the Battle of Narvik can teach us?
The battle itself was a very interesting battle because this was a battle for resources. That we can call that a battle for resources. The Germans, wanted to lay their hands on the iron ore that was excavated in Sweden and then brought to the ports in Norway. The British and the French, they just thought they could stop that German expansion in Norway. Norway itself being torn between, working with the Germans or keeping up resistance. But obviously, the King Haakon, he called the Norwegians to resist the Germans. And obviously that battle showed the military potential of the British and the French and the Polish. And we must not forget that this was a sea operation. Basically, the troops were brought to Norway. They were brought to Narvik, and they had to suffer or endure the terrain as well, which was very difficult. And for the Poles, I think it just showed that we haven't lost the spirit for fighting. We haven't lost the spirit to resist the Germans, and that we will always confront the Germans wherever we are or wherever they are. And it actually proved in the course of the war, the Poles were everywhere, fighting on all fronts. And as I recall, I think one of the captured German soldiers at Narvik said, "Oh my God, here are those Poles again." So that just showed, that was a sign for anybody else that we would support the Allied effort to fight the war against Adolf Hitler.
That's fascinating. That is a very important lesson that is learnt. But could you also tell me, what are the lessons that could be learnt from having battlefield museums?
Well, that's a very, you know, interesting question. And this is why we get all those people to come for the World Battlefield Museums Forum and discuss the idea of the battlefield museum. First of all, for us, for the Museum of the Second World War, it's important, this exchange of experiences, because mm-hmm. the Westerplatte and the War of 1939 development is going on mm-hmm. To be completed by 2027, 2028, I believe. And we want those experiences from other battlefields, from commemoration and heritage, to be accessible to us, because we want to do it in the best possible way. And we want to learn from people. And, you know, the battlefield museums around the world are very, very specific, because, you know, generally what you have is an open space outside, outdoors, okay? Sometimes it's very vast, okay, like for instance in Gettysburg. And how do you manage a narrative of a battle that took place over you know, several hectares of land. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sometimes battles were smaller. And, you know, the example of other battlefield museums shows how to manage resources that you have that are left after the battlefield, whether it's the infrastructure, whether it's the archaeological excavation. And what we found is that the best way to address the construction or the creation of a battlefield museum is to have a battlefield on the exact spot that the battle
took
that
place.
The given battle took place. Mm-hmm. And the good examples are, for instance, in Germany and at Osnabrück Kalkriese Museum, commemorating the Roman battle with the Germanic tribes. Gettysburg, the same thing. USS Arizona Memorial, same thing. Same place as the battle, where the battle happened. Then you've got this memorial, whose worth is even greater, because it's been commemorated, the battle's been
on
the very site. And this, we believe, is the good way to address the museum at Westerplatte, although obviously at the Museum of the Second World War we have sections relating to Polish September campaign, to different aspects of the Second World War. But, you know, having a true museum at Westerplatte would add it a bit more value, a bit more worth to the whole idea of commemoration and heritage.
Well, given that Poland has been so involved on every front of World War II, maybe this would be an interesting objective for the Second World War Museum, to actually have, let's say, departments or sections of its museum, or field sections of the museum in the places where those battles, for example, in Monte Cassino, where there is... It's quite shocking. There's a very small museum, maybe shocking is not the word, it's surprising, that of such an important, every major city in Poland has a Monte Cassino street, but in Monte Cassino itself there's very little. So maybe that could be one of the great objectives of for the Second World War Museum, to look at other battle sites around, be it in Tobruk, be it in Monte Cassino, or some of the other great places where the Poles, the RAF sites in the UK. This would maybe be a great objective for the World War II Museum in Gdańsk, to be able to facilitate.
I think, yeah, we're ready, you know, we're willing to help such initiatives, and we do actually, because there are, you know, different groups of people in different parts of the world that, you know, get together, get some, you know, a certain funding, and they would either, you know, refurbish the memory place, refurbish the monument, or erect a new one, where the things happened during the war where, for instance, Polish soldiers died, but the incident was not well known. It's been probably preserved in the memory of the local people, of the local Polish community. And yeah, such things happen all around the world, and we support such initiatives.
I think there's a really good model that could be looked at is the British Commonwealth War Graves Commission, where they have a standardised system of graves and grave sites and monuments. So wherever you go in the world, be it in Japan, in Singapore, if you go to China, Europe, in Italy, North Africa, you'll see these British sites, British and Commonwealth war graves. So maybe this is a great opportunity for the Museum of the Second World War also to create almost a brand of how you commemorate Polish battles in various places across the world.
That's definitely an idea to look for. And, you know, the Museum of the Second World War is a big, you know, is a huge institution, and we have many different projects and many different projects to come commemorating history and trying to tell people from other parts of Europe, other parts of the world about the Polish experience, traumatic experience of World War II, which I find when I talk to people is not well known or is not well understood, actually, what we suffered here compared to other countries, for instance, in the west of Europe.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very interesting. Well, I hope everybody has the time to listen to the programme about Narvik, which will follow this broadcast. It's a very interesting programme. There's a lot of information. It's very well produced, a lot of input, and it was produced thanks to the Museum of the Second World War. Our guest this morning was Carol Shako.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, listeners, and hear you next time.
Goodbye.